You're the bestie, Paulette. Thank you, Jared Abrams, for a great 2015. Thank you all for listening. Bring such joy all week long thinking about how am I going to connect those worlds of art, medicine, sports. Thank Gene Crawford in the operating room, making me look good, doing all those surgeries together for all these years, three decades. Don Aiello, making everything work. She's a nurse. The doctors get the credit. The nurses do all the work. God bless the nurses. They're the angels from above, just like my mother was a nurse. And if the show really matters to you, write me a letter. The address at the station, 800 West Olympic Boulevard, Suite 8200. Zip code's 90015. Love to hear from you. What are we going to do this year? But every week something happens. LeGarrette Blount hurt his hip. Bo Jackson hurt his hip a long time ago. Has the technology improved? Yes, it has. Not only in making diagnosis, but how to treat a hip problem. In Bo Jackson's time, we didn't have that. I think that's what will be my topic in a couple of weeks. Next week, no show. We have college football. Podcast. You can always listen to them. Go to the ESPN LA or ESPN Radio website. Download the podcast. All right, the number's 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Jonathan in Los Angeles. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hi, good morning, Dr. Clapper.
Good morning, Jonathan. What do you do for a living?
I'm a home inspector in the L.A. area.
Wow! What's the strangest thing you've seen when you go into a home?
I'd have to say that the hoarders are the strangest thing I've seen. It blows my mind.
That they just keep saving junk, hoping Nehru suits will once again come into style.
Yeah, and they know where stuff is, and it's under piles, and they always say that they're going to clean up. There's just a few things lying around.
You know, my physician assistant has the cleanest desk in the whole office that I have because she don't hoard. She just throws everything away. If I need it, don't worry, I'll get it again. It's like, are you kidding me? I collect everything. I have Mad magazines from the 1960s. I am terrible at this. So thank God you're not inspecting my house, Jonathan. All right, how can I help you? What's up with you? What do you do to stay in shape?
Well, that was my problem. I had an accident over a year ago at Christmas time. I took my kids to one of those jumping trampoline places.
Mm.
And
you know what they're called, Jonathan? They're called pre-op. That's what those jumping places are called.
Okay.
Where are you from, Jonathan?
Well, it's a long story, actually. Your subject this morning is very interesting to me because I've done a number of things in my life and lived in a number of countries.
Really? Well, that's the key. That's why you have a rich life, Jonathan, except now you hurt your knee. Tell me about your knee.
Well, so I was on the trampoline with my kids, and I was jumping very high, and when I came down, it felt like the top of my leg and my knee in the middle, of course. And the bottom part of my leg kind of went against each other with the force coming down to the right mm-hmm. and the force from the bottom going up to the left. And mm-hmm. the top of my knee, I felt a really bad stretch and just a horrible pain.
Mm. Have you had an X-ray or an MRI?
No, at the time I didn't have insurance. And so I just I had to stay off of it for about, well, I kept walking, but with a brace for about 2 or 3 months. And then I've just been trying to slowly rehab it since then. I started cycling.
Good.
With an indoor cycle about 6 months ago, and just trying to get back to strength. But I was wondering. That's my question. Is it something that would maybe need an operation in the future, or is it something that I can rehab? Do you think?
You always want to try to avoid surgery, Jonathan. That's always the key. But you know, yesterday one of the knee surgeries I did, I'm still after all of these years, 30 years being an orthopedic surgeon. As busy as I am being in people's body parts and in their joints, it's still a miracle to see how we are made. So what you would see if I went inside your knee right now, you know what you would see? That the inner portion, like your big toe, is the medial side of your leg. Your little toe is the lateral side. So extrapolate that up to your knee. The big toe side of your knee is the medial side. Yes, there are cables. Yes, there are ligaments that keep you in place. But what's interesting is you think Your knee, clapper vision, is like a flip phone with a hinge. Yes, the shape of the medial side of the femur as it fits into the tibia is this beautiful ball and socket joint type of relationship. And you can see it. There's a carved out concavity to the tibia, the top of the tibia, the shin bone. And there's this beautiful convexity curve, hemisphere, to the end of the femur. You would think that that's exactly what you would see on the lateral side of the hinge joint, right? Just like the flip phone. The hinges are the same throughout the hinge of the flip phone. But no, that's not what you see. On the lateral side of the knee, and I was amazed again looking at it after 12,000 surgeries yesterday, yet again, the lateral side, yes, the lateral condyle on the femur is a hemisphere. It is convex. But guess what you see on the top of the tibial plateau laterally? You don't see a male-female fit. You actually see a convexity. It's like a, it's not a mountain, but it's like a little sand dune mound is the top of the tibia cartilage. It does not go in like a hole, but it's actually more like a bump. Why? Because your knee joint on the medial side works as a hinge, but the lateral side of your knee joint allows for rotation. So that is what allows you to rotate. So as much as you think your knee bends and straightens on the bike like a hinge, you and I know that there is some rotation that also occurs in your knee. And when you jumped on that trampoline, and now all this time later, doesn't feel quite right. Yes, you can rehab it by making the muscles strong, but I would love to know, what did you do to the ligaments, to the cables? You need, you really do. Information is power. You need an MRI. Don't let the goddamn HMO and insurance companies, which are awful, stop you from it. Get one. You know, you need to get an MRI just for information reasons. Doesn't mean you need surgery. There's a book I wrote with Linda Huey called Heal Your Knees. Get that book. It'll help you in your rehab. But I would encourage you, get a study done. Don't let them shoot cortisone in your knee. Figure it out, and then you're more than welcome to call here, and I will give Clapper Vision and translate what the MRI really means in plain English, if that's okay. All right?
All right. Thank you, Dr. Clapper.
Okay. God bless, Jonathan. Have a good day today. Quickly, let's go to Ron in Northridge. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, Dr. Clapper. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Anytime, Ron. What do you do for a living?
I'm a respiratory therapist.
Oh, nice. Good for you.
Yeah.
So,
for a couple years.
So does it make you just crazy when you watch people smoke cigarettes after all that you do?
Yes, definitely. Especially colleagues.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
It's unbelievable. And the thing is that damn chemical that's in the cigarette is so addicting. It's worse than heroin. That nicotine, let me tell you something. It is easier to get off heroin than it is to stop smoking. It's amazing. But it destroys your body, and you get to see it firsthand with that cough that you got to deal with as a respiratory therapist. Where are you from originally?
Well, I grew up both here in Glendale and also in the Philippines.
Ah, Glendale. That's where Tim Matheson was born. This will be interesting. You have to listen. At 8:15, he's coming on. Okay, how can I help you? We have a couple of minutes left.
All right, so I got knee pain in both legs. I developed arthritis on my left, and a couple years ago, I felt some pain on my right, and now I got pain in the front of my patella.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, I'm not sure if this is connected, but my hip, my left side of my hip is starting to hurt, and I heard you talk about it for a moment. So I'm having pain like standing up from the chair,
yep.
And I feel a pinch on my
left. So people come to me all the time and say their hip hurts. They point to one of three places, Ron. When they take their hand and they point in the front where their groin is, that's coming from inside the joint. Labrum, cartilage, hip flexors, yeah. But usually it's inside the joint itself. That's the first location. They'll then say, my hip hurts, Dr. Clapper. They'll point to the side of their hip. That's a good place. That's bursitis. It never needs surgery. I'm not a big fan of cortisone shots. I like to treat people with the pool, but that's a bursitis. And the third area, they take their fist and they punch their butt and they say, my hip hurts right here, and it's their sacroiliac joint. It's usually coming from their spine. So if you're, where's your pain? One of three places.
Actually, yeah, probably the backside
Okay. So as long as it's not really in the groin, Ron, you don't have to get too nervous from what you described. And I would suggest that your knee issues are causing you to alter your gait, and you're developing bursitis and aggravating your sacroiliac joint. Certainly, deleting the bad exercises, treadmill, lunges, squats, stair machines, weights, and increase the pool, the bike, the elliptical. These are things that you're going to need to do, particularly with your history of knee problems already. So there's a book I wrote, Heal Your Hips. Heal Your Knees is another book. You need to learn the water exercises. That will ultimately save you. Don't let them shoot you with cortisone. If despite doing these changes, deleting the bad exercises and increasing the good ones, you're still having pain, then you need information. You'll need an X-ray, an MRI, you'll need an exam. Don't let them just give you pills for it. Be holistic, okay?
Got it.
All right, God bless. What's that?
Can I ask one more question?
Of course.
What would be the problem with getting cortisone shots?
It's toxic to the articular cartilage. So it's you know, it's not like I've never given someone a cortisone shot. Their daughter's getting married. They want to go to see the David. To do it as a single shot to help you get to an event, I'm okay with it. But to do it long-term as treatment, it not only goes after the inflammation, so it makes you feel better temporarily, but it stays there. And it does its nasty job on the good structures, and it's toxic to those structures, like the articular cartilage. So in the long run, we'll do more damage.
Got it.
All right?
Thanks, Doc.
Okay, anytime, Ron. Chocolate. Let's talk chocolate for a second. I love C's, the nuts and chews. I've actually had some of you come to the office. Instead of a copay, just bring a pound or 2 pounds of nuts and chews. Ugh, the greatest. But I found a chocolate bar this week that's right on that level, maybe better. It's from Ritter Sport. The thing is, they cost $3. They're expensive. But man, hazelnut. An almond is great, but hazelnut. When you combine chocolate and hazelnut, that's what's in Nutella. And that's what's in the greatest gelato ice cream flavors you'll ever have, when they have chocolate and hazelnut. I think this is a European chocolate, this Ritter Sport. But man, I've got a whole stack of them in the passenger seat of my car, and I'm just driving around eating chocolate all day long. This is the key. It's terrible to be in traffic. Success in life is when you take something that's negative and don't just make it go away. Turn it into a positive.
Damn right.
So that's what I do. My passenger seat now has chocolate all over the place. All these Ritter Sport different flavor chocolate bars. I get in the car going, I'm going to be in traffic for... No, not a problem. I'm just going to eat chocolate for an hour and a half. This is a problem. Which reminds me of this week, I had to go get razor blades. When a man goes shopping for razor blades versus a woman going shopping for razor blades, in order to get to the razor blade aisle, I had to pass the freezer section. And as I'm walking past the freezer section, I'm going, who would buy anything in these freezer sections? Tater tots, frozen peas. I'm not buying any of this stuff on my way to razor blades. And then all of a sudden, there they were. Onion rings in the freezing section. In my whole life, I never had an onion ring bought in a store. And I brought them home. My wife goes, you're not eating those. We're not having onion rings. Oh, man, I had them. They were the guys. She had one and I had 20. It was a nice deal. They're the most delicious things. I didn't know whether to put mustard or ketchup on it. What do you do with an onion ring? All I know is I cooked them extra long so they were extra crispy. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm so excited to talk to our next guest, the great, iconic football player, the great Dick Butkus. Dick, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem.
Listen, I hope you don't mind me comparing you to Michelangelo, the marble sculptor, and the way he hit the stone.
One of my favorites.
Okay. Because I appreciate in you, in your career, yes, you were big. Yes, you were strong. But there's more than that. It's clear when you went to hit somebody, the aggression we all, I get, But it's the fact that you made a science out of hitting in the right spot. There's an equipment manager from University of Illinois who talked about how you used to study film for people's tendencies. Tell us about the work ethic and the work you put in of the science of hitting.
Well, you know, from each level, from high school then to college, you know, the opposition gets a little bit better each step.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to the pros, it's another step up. But mm-hmm. a lot of guys have problems hiding what they do best, you know, their go-to move as a pass rusher or whatever. So by studying films long enough, you'll be able to see all these different traits over the course of a couple, 3 or 4 games that you're watching. And then I just adapted to that.
Wow.
That's all. It was just, I was a fullback in high school, and what really bothered me was when someone hit me like right in the chest, you know, and wrapped my arms up. And then as I was falling, I don't know which arm to put out there to break my fall. And lo and behold, sometimes it was the arm with the ball in it and caused me a fumble. So I just started doing that in high school, and it worked. I started doing it in college thinking it wouldn't work now because all the people are better. And it worked. And finally in the pros, it worked also.
So you learned, by being a fullback, you learned the weaknesses, the tendencies of what a fullback, and you didn't like to get hit there. So when you became on the defensive side, you basically did what you hated the most when you were a fullback.
Exactly.
Oh, yep. My God, that's genius.
Well, I don't think I was the Lone Ranger in that respect. I think a lot of guys did not like to get their arms wrapped up with nothing to break their fall.
Now, Dick, your dad was an electrician, right?
Yeah.
My dad was a carpenter. I became an orthopedic surgeon. You became a football player. What did you learn from your dad? Take us in terms of, I mean, there were like 9 kids in the family, right? You were the youngest of 9 kids.
Right.
Tell me about your dad. What did you learn work ethic-wise? What did you learn from him?
He came from Lithuania, and he was working at Pullman Standard. He was putting electric in railroad cars, and then he would have a lot of side jobs afterwards at night and whatever. And of course I was too young to go with him. All my brothers, you know, would take turns going with him and helping him on side jobs. And my mother, I remember, used to get so upset because he'd be home maybe on an off night that he didn't have a job, and he goes out, and you know, my mother would say, well, you know, scream at him, where are you going? And he says, you know, that guy's refrigerator I tried to fix the other day, it's on the blink again. I got to go back, and I want to fix it, make it right.
Oh, wow.
And I listened to that. Hmm. And it was more than one time. And so I got the point of, you know, when you start something, finish it. And no matter what happens as far as time or money, just do the job, you know.
Wow.
Give the people the service and back it up.
Wow.
I think that was one of the key things I learned from them.
That's unbelievable. My dad taught me to measure twice, cut once. It comes in very handy, Dick, as an orthopedic surgeon.
There you go.
Speaking of orthopedic surgery, take us back in time. And I don't want to get into the fact that this doctor really did not do the right thing by you. But I'm fascinated by, I talked to Rick Barry about his knee injury, about the way we were in the dark ages. We didn't have MRIs. We barely had an X-ray and knew what to do with it in those days. Nowadays, every kind of bump and bruise, we get an MRI and we get hysterical that someone's been injured. But when you played, what was the trainer like? What was the doctor like? What was the treatment like? Because the brutal injuries were there. Take us back.
The doctor, or team doctor, back in those days, you could not go and, you know, go to Birmingham and see Dr. Andrews about your knee. You had to go to the team doctor. Otherwise, you would violate your contract if you went somewhere else. Because they thought he was the best. And he used to, you know, he really injected a lot of people with hydrocortisone. And I never got it before a game, but I would get it like 3 times a week for over 7 years.
Jeez.
So I think that had a little something to do with my knee deteriorating. And then so he goes in and operates on it, and I become allergic to catgut that he used for the sutures.
Wow.
And so, you know, back then you used the full leg cast. So I would put the cast on. I would go home, and like 2 days later, I thought my leg was going to explode.
Wow.
And it really hurt around the groin area, which is where the lymph nodes were. So I would go back every week for about 4 weeks, and he would open that cast up, finally, the last time, after doing this for 4 weeks, the stench was so bad in my leg, the skin was like rotting from all this crap oozing out.
Jeez.
And my friend who drove me there, he threw up and nearly passed out with the smell.
Wow.
And what does he do? He just dabs a little bit, and he takes a pair of scissors and cuts the hole bigger and pulls out a suture. And I'm like, what the heck? And so we went through the whole operation again, and it was never right. So I never really practiced. I never practiced the last 3 years because we had moved from Wrigley Field, which was a grass field, and we moved to Soldier Field, and they had AstroTurf. And it was in 1971. You know, it was not very good. So I really had problems practicing on it and everything else. So I hardly ever practiced. Just played the game and then get my treatments, my shots during the week.
I can just tell you, as an orthopedic surgeon, when you read the history of what we did, they didn't know any better. But the great Jim Nicholas, who operated on Joe Namath's knee, I mean, this is the same mentality. Way back in the 60s, he described an operation called a 5-in-1, which meant you looked at your meniscus like it was your appendix. Even in 2015, right away, they want to take your appendix out. What we're going to end up learning, I think, in 30 years is the appendix is probably a very important part of your GI tract. You need to do everything you can to preserve it. But he described, if you tore your meniscus, you should take out four other things at the same time. It was unbelievable how they looked at things then. And now we do everything we can to do the opposite, to really preserve it. Incredible. Well, thank you for that insight. I want to ask you a little bit about Gale Sayers. Gale Sayers, who you played with, but like you, has a God-given talent, but yet incredible work ethic on top of it. I want you to just listen to Gale Sayers.
He's a God-given talent. You know, no doubt about it. I had great peripheral vision. There's no doubt about that. I could see everybody on the field. And so I knew where to run, where to cut. In the same way, I had a feel for what people were. Because I know many times, many runs, I wanted to films. There'd be a fellow coming from my blind side, and no way I could see him, but I could feel him.
Tell us, Dick Butkus, what's it like to have a sixth sense about people around you?
He had that. He really did. And the thing of it was, I noticed in practicing against him, he would, like, run off tackle, and I'd have an angle on him, and he'd, like, stop on a dime, and he goes the other way just as fast. I mean, it's unbelievable. I used to love watching him, and I always wanted to be on the punt return team and the kickoff return team, you know, to help block for him because I just loved watching him go. And he had, you know, his knee blown out, and Dr. Fox operated on him, and he came back and led the league in rushing.
Yeah.
And then he got it hurt again, and then that was it.
Mm.
So he had three operations, and the third one put him out of football.
Yeah. So basically, it's the, you know, they talk about performance enhancing drugs. How about surgery? Performance enhancing surgery. Sandy Koufax couldn't have Tommy John surgery. Look at what happens to players now after the Tommy John. Look at Adrian Peterson. A year after his ACL, he almost breaks Eric Dickerson's record. It's amazing the advancement we've had in orthopedic surgery to allow the things that you and Gale Sayers had to deal with to not happen anymore.
No, you know, the nutrition is so much better, and the strength training is better, and of course, the medical stuff is a lot better.
Wow. So it's great that you are giving back so much to the world of football and all the lessons. It's almost like you got beat up, but now you're kind of taking all of that and making the world a better place by what you went through. And I think that's the best way to deal with it, Dick. It's really fantastic. We're going to be talking to Dr. Santoro at 8 o'clock. So I can't wait to talk to him about how he's helped you as well.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a good guy. And you play golf with him.
Well, you might say that.
I hear that's where the word handicap came from.
I mean, what is the deal where, you know, if my marker is like in his line, he just moves his ball?
It's called a mulligan.
You know, buy a tree or something, he just kicks it out a little bit. What the heck is that all about?
Oh, my God.
So do you do that on your surgeries?
No, you don't get that chance, Dick Butkus, that's for sure.
All right.
So anyway, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, taking time out of a Saturday. We really appreciate it. And really, in so many ways, we learn from someone like you. It's not the brute strength. It's your dad taught you. You're going to do a job, you finish it, you do it right. It's the precision with which you hit. Same thing in art, same thing in surgery. But it's people like you that we get to see and appreciate their career. You did it with such dignity and class, Dick Butkus. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
You got it.
Okay, buddy.
Thank you.
Incredible to talk to an icon, the great Dick Butkus. What a joy this is. What a great opportunity. What a great show this is. Until then, I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. I'll see you on the radio.